and welcome to The Dorothy Project, the interview podcast that finds the Dorothy in Friends of Dorothy. My name's Alice, and I want to introduce you to women who have a certain connection with gay male society and ask what we have in common and what's drawn us into this amazing culture. Today, I'm talking to Holly Shortall. Holly is from Dublin and co-hosts the hit podcast Popcest. She's an activist with ACT UP Dublin and a fashion illustrator, as well as complaining about dangerous potholes in her local area. That is high on your Google search. That's like page one.
Oh my gosh.
Basically, a Renaissance woman. Hi, Holly.
Hi, how are you? So nice to meet you, finally.
You too. And what a thing that brought us together, the Spice Girls concerts in Manchester.
I know. I'm both sitting here, to give you a visual, both sitting here wearing leopard print.
Look, I couldn't meet you in anything other than leopard print.
So we went to the Spice. Well, you went on Friday.
Yes.
And I went last night, so I'm not the freshest person in the world today, but I think I've managed to just pull it together.
I'm sure you'll pull it off. It's all good. So first of all, tell me about Popcest.
Okay, so Popcest is me and my friend Connor. Connor has worked in media, radio, also very professional, really good at it, and then me, who has not done any of that stuff. It's done through Virgin Media Television in Ireland. So they approached us in, I think it was October or November last year, and just said, look, we're thinking of putting something together. Would you guys be interested? They didn't actually know that we were best friends. They had no idea that we actually, like, as far as I know, like, that we were really close friends. So it's basically me and Connor talking about all of the week's kind of pop culture news. So it could be anything from like the Met Gala, the Oscars, the Kardashians, if something big has kind of happened there, any drama. And we have a couple of fun little segments in it. And I think what works really well, kind of in the same theme of what we're talking about today, is that because Connor is a gay guy and I'm a straight girl and we're best friends, we have two completely different approaches to these conversations. So for example, we talked about the whole James Charles and Tati Westbrook drama recently. And Connor,
which I swear is like more complicated than Brexit.
Well, it was. Yeah, I have to say. Yeah, it was crazy. But Connor's able to give it this whole other perspective, looking at it as a gay guy. So I think it just works.
So who is your audience? Do you think it's a similar mix where you have like gay guys and straight girls?
Yeah. I do, but like, what's really weird is my parents listen to it, and like, obviously, my dad listens to it, and he's straight, and he'll be like, oh, you know, great episode this week, I learned X, Y, and Z. And I know a couple of people who might not fit the demographic that me and Connor kind of sit in, but who listen to it and really enjoy it. So, but I do think it is probably predominantly gay guys. And, or maybe I shouldn't even say gay guys, like the LGBT community, and then girls as well, maybe straight girls. So,
and what do you think are the different kind of perspectives that you bring? Because I feel like you're very literate in kind of gay male culture. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the references are very like kind of Twitter gay, all of those kind of memes, like and ope.
And ope.
And you're like, does that mean anything to like... What is the kind of straight girl perspective that you think you bring?
Well, look, I, you know, as kind of involved in like, you know, LGBT activism and understanding, you know, the ins and outs of like the issues still facing the community and stuff like that, there is only so much I can talk about and there's only so much I can say, and there's like almost nothing that I can understand on a personal level, because I never had to go through any of the things that my friends who are gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, non-binary, whatever it is that they are, I have no understanding of how that feels, whereas somebody like Connor does. So like, I wouldn't sit in the podcast and be like saying things like, oh, you know, queer culture and blah, blah, blah. I don't feel like it's for me to use those kind of words. I feel like I, as much as I can, I know my place, if that makes sense. Whereas Connor is able to bring this whole other perspective that two straight people just literally could not have, and just brings the conversation to, and we could be talking about fucking anything. We could be talking about like Kanye West and like Kim or something like that. And Connell just has this like really interesting story or anecdote that it's just a completely different perspective. And I could, you know, and I know that I could never reach those kind of places or people, and you know, by talking about the same stuff the way Connor does. So
yeah, I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because that's something that one of the reasons that I wanted to like have these conversations, because I do feel very conscious of like not overstepping the mark and kind of like, yeah, what can I speak on and what should I kind of speak on? Yeah. Where should I be in terms of how you define yourself? Would you call yourself queer? Would you think of yourself like that?
No, I definitely wouldn't. Like, to me, like the Q sits at the end of the LGBTQ, and I think it's I'm sure there's, everyone has their own understanding of it or whatever, but I think it describes everybody who is in that family and in that community, and I don't think it's a word for people like me to try and insert ourselves into. And I'm fine with that, because I have the privilege of being able to walk down the street holding hands with my boyfriend. I can go into any pub or club I want in the world. I'm not going to be, you know, persecuted in random countries for being who I am. So I'm more than happy if there's a couple of words I can't use. You know what I mean? That's fine by me. But no, I definitely would never use that word to describe myself. No.
Yeah, it's interesting, I think, because I think there are people who, on paper, you could be like, well, it looks like you have kind of similar lives, but mm-hmm. see these kind of things really, really differently, and yeah. I love that. I wonder if some of it's partly to do with, like, how you kind of found your way into this kind of culture.
Yeah. So
something I'm asking everyone is, like, when was the first time you went to a gay bar?
I think it would have been around 2014, maybe early 2014, so not like that long ago. I was about 25, I think. I moved around a lot as a child, and I found it very difficult, I think, to kind of make friends and hold on to friends and stuff like that. I think when we moved house about 5 or 6 times. This is before the internet, this is before people had mobile phones. We were kids anyway, so we wouldn't have had those things. But and I went to a couple of different schools then as well. I feel like, and I'm not ashamed of saying it really anymore, but like I actually just didn't have that many friends for probably quite a while. And I don't know if that was my own fault or, you know what I mean? Was I not like the nicest person? I really don't know now looking back on it. But I did meet one of my best friends, Jamie, who's actually just moved to London a couple of weeks ago in 2014. And we met on Twitter, and he commissioned me to do an illustration for his friend. And we met in town. I went to like hand it over to him, and he was paying for it or whatever. And he was like, oh, I have to go and get a frame. Do you want to come with me? So we ended up shopping and going for wine, blah, blah, blah. So that was the start of like a really nice friendship. And I think it must have just been around then that we just went out one night, and I hadn't gone out for a really long time. Like, I used to really not drink that much. I never really went out because I did have a couple of horrible experiences of like men grabbing my bum or like fellas trying to chat me up and stuff like that. And I'm just really, really not into that at all. Like, I do not go out with the intention of wanting to speak to any straight men or be touched like most women. So I just didn't go out. And then, yeah, I just went to this, the George. It's not a huge amount of gay bars or, I suppose, LGBT venues or spaces in Dublin, but went to the George and just had a ball. And just, to be honest, I just felt like I was invisible. And I loved it. You know, it was just really nice. Like, no one looked at me. Like, it was amazing. And we had such a good time. And, yeah, so I think that was... Yeah, I do remember it. Like, I remember going and just being like, wow, like, this is a really nice place to be. These people are all fab. And yeah.
Yeah, it's weird that, isn't it? When you're just like, especially, I mean, inconvenient at the bar maybe, but like, yeah, that first time when you're just like, this is I have a different kind of status here.
It was an experience. And I think it's so important for those places to exist. And look, I would only ever go somewhere like that if I was with a group of my friends I would never, ever, like, I don't think even suggest, you know, let's do this. Wait to be asked, you know, and I would never, like, go in with, like, a group of girls or anything like that. I fucking hate that shit.
Do you ever have female straight friends who ask?
I mean, recently, like, somebody said to me, oh, my friends after getting engaged and I'm planning the hen party, we want to go to Manchester. Do you know where's like the best gay bars to go to for the hen? And I just replied and I was like, is there anyone who's LGBT actually going? And she's like, no. And I was just like, well, then I really don't think it's appropriate for me to even answer that question. It's not a fucking zoo, like, do you know what I mean? It's not a carnival, like, this is... You can go anywhere you bloody want, do you know what I mean?
So hen parties are becoming, like, the villain of this series. Like,
really?
Yeah. Most people have mentioned hen do's as kind of, like, I guess, how not to do it.
Yeah.
Wonder if a lot of it comes back to that feeling of, like, where can you feel safe as a woman? And it's really difficult, right? Because if you're trying to go to someone else's space in order to feel safe, but yeah.
I do understand that to a degree, but I think it's like, it's some weird form of like tokenism. I think it's treating these spaces like they're fine to go to for one night, for a bit of fun, you know, see whatever it is, look at a couple of gorge guys dancing or whatever it is and get dressed up in your hen party gear or whatever. I don't know. I mean, I just think it's fundamentally wrong. I really do. And I don't think personally that, like, I know what you're saying about women not feeling safe, but there is still loads of things that you can do, you know, that don't involve dragging a load of drunk straight women into a bar that, like, people have to queue up or pay whatever it is outside because you're in there taking up their space, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to ask you about ACT UP.
Mm-hmm.
So I've literally just read this history of, like, AIDS activism. Yeah. And obviously ACT UP was a huge
part of it.
Huge part of that. So, like, when did you get involved? What kind of sparked that?
I got involved in ACT UP Dublin. So ACT UP is the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, and it was established in Paris in 1987 in response to the AIDS crisis at the time and the inaction by pharmaceutical companies and the government and, you know, health officials to actually address this situation. The Dublin chapter of it started in 2016, and basically Ireland is in the middle of, like, we try not to use this word because we don't want to scare people or whatever, but, like, there is a HIV crisis. So the focus for ACT UP now for us is HIV, because thankfully, due to science and advances in medicine, people who have HIV, living with HIV, who have an undetectable viral load, so that means that they've been taking their medication for X amount of time and it's not detectable anymore in their blood, they actually can't pass it on to anyone else, and they're able to lead like completely healthy and as normal as possible a life could be. You know, so a lot of what we do is trying to educate people about U equals U, so that's what I was just talking about, which is undetectable equals untransmittable. That's huge. Like, it's massive, and people don't know about it. It's crazy. Like, there hasn't been any massive national campaigns, so you've got grassroots organisations like ACT UP who have no money. Like, we go out on the streets shaking buckets to get money so that we can run Facebook ads, so that we can create posters and jumpers and T-shirts and whatever it is. So, but now it's just this amazing bunch of people. I mean, we have, like, I'm probably the only straight person in ACT UP at the moment. Probably, I don't know. But there's girls, there's guys, we've a couple of transgender members who are like trans women and trans men, all incredible. There's people in ACT UP Dublin who are living with HIV. There's people who are not living with HIV. So it's just a really nice, diverse group of people who are really fucking angry and want to see things changing, you know?
So what's caused this kind of, I guess, the crisis at this stage of the game?
Well, basically, I think it's like every 18 hours somebody new is diagnosed with HIV in Ireland. So it's like, in most other countries, the numbers are going down every year, year on year on year. London, for example, Australia, like any country that's introduced a PrEP. I don't know, do you know what PrEP is? I always fuck this up, but it's, I'm just going to call it PrEP. It's a tablet that you can take, and it protects you. Like, if you're at risk or whatever, it will protect you like when you're having sex, basically. And in Ireland, it is, it's expensive. It's not free through the HSE, which is our NHS, essentially. At the moment, there's a pharmaceutical company called Gilead in our courts in Ireland. They're an American company. And what they're trying to do is they have the patent to make this drug. And basically, their version of it is like €400 a month, which is like £400 practically, yeah, a month. Like, imagine your contraceptive pill or fucking anything else that you had to take was £400 a month. But what they're doing is they are trying to hold on to that patent so that the generics can't make the generic versions of, which are like 50 quid, which is still really expensive. But to answer your question, why do I think? There's many reasons, but the main one, in my opinion, is the lack of sexual health. There's just no focus on it in the country. I mean, there's 10 counties in Ireland with no public STI clinic. Yeah, out of 26, like.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's fucking crazy. Like, so you have situations where the sex education doesn't really exist either. It's really poor. It's archaic. It's not LGBT inclusive, you know. It's just crazy. So they're slashing all the funding. The diagnosis rates are going up. But everyone is trying to put the blame on the people who are just going out and having sex. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's so heartbreaking when it's so preventable at this stage. Like,
yeah, but it's like people, if you can't afford these, you know, expensive tablets.
Yes, a massive amount.
Then you're not being equipped with the tools that are required to protect yourself from these things, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just such a shame in Ireland when it comes to sex. Like, you'd be embarrassed going to buy condoms. Like, do you know what I mean? Embarrassed going to buy a box of tampons even. Like, people are just mortified talking about sex.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. So how can people donate?
Well, we don't really have, like, I must check. We don't really have, like, a donation. I don't think we're allowed because we're not a charity, you see. But I think if you wanted to get involved, you could just email us, or, like, everything is on our website, activedublin.com, or maybe we'll set up a little fundraiser, or just do a tweet about U equals U. Like, just, you know, Google and learn something, and next time you hear somebody, whether it's in work or, you know, out on a night out, or somebody in your family saying something, you know, that stigmatizes people who have HIV or is incorrect, correct them, tell them they're wrong, tell them that these people have absolutely nothing to be ashamed about. And, you know, just the stigma that still exists is crazy. Like, it really is. And the lack of education, like, people just don't know about U equals U, and it is like one of the most powerful pieces of information from, like, medicine or science that's ever happened. It's incredible. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing how far things have come, but there's such a lag, isn't there, with the kind of general population.
Absolutely.
Understanding.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you this specifically because you're another kind of very online person.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was really interesting that it was Twitter that kind of started all this. Do you think it sort of makes it easier being online sometimes? Like, I don't know if you have this, but sometimes I meet up with a group of friends and I look around and I'm like, oh, I'm the only girl. And I wonder if being online and talking about pop culture and stuff like that,
yeah,
kind of, I don't know whether A, you find your tribe that you might not in person as easily, and B, whether it's, I guess, a space where everyone can be all together.
On Twitter,
you mean?
Yeah, I think so. I think, like, Twitter definitely gives people an opportunity to meet people that they never... I mean, I'm sitting here in my friend's flat in Manchester, you know, one of my best friends in the whole world. I've been coming here now for 2 years, like, practically every month for a weekend or every, you know, couple of weeks. And I met all of these people on social media, you know? And I think you meet people, you click, you find common interests, you laugh at the same things. And I think it's completely normal. I do. And that's why I think, as well, I was only saying this on another podcast I was on a couple of weeks ago. Like, everyone is still trying to terrify parents about their kids talking to strangers online. Yet we're all fucking doing it. Every adult is doing it anyway. So it's like, you have to, like, talk about these things, accept that it's happening, and try and minimize any kind of risks or anything like that. But if you're a kid, it's like, you know, trans or something, 13-year-old doesn't fucking, is not learning anything about it in school, doesn't even know anyone else like them exists. If they're on, you know, Instagram or Twitter and they come across some other kid down the road or in a different country who is the exact same as them, that's not a bad thing. We shouldn't look at it like it's a bad thing. We should go, you know, as you said, this is people finding their tribes, you know. It's amazing.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you what you think, because there's all sorts of people I've been talking to. So I've been talking to, mm-hmm. like, trans women, queer women, like, lesbians. But as a fellow straight woman, mm-hmm. what do you think the best way, because it's Pride season, yeah. like, people are going to ask, what do you think the best way for straight women to support the LGBT community is? How's the best way to do it?
Okay, well, personally, I think it is not going into a shop and buying a t-shirt with a rainbow on it. Even though I have done that myself, it's supporting individual people. So I recently found a fundraiser in Dublin, which the sole purpose of it is to basically bring busloads of LGBTQ kids up to, not kids, like teenagers, whatever, up to Pride for the weekend or for the parade, for the day. So I think things like that, like instead of spending the £20 on the t-shirt with the, you know, whatever it is, rainbow on it in the shop, donate the £20 silently. Like, you don't have to tell the whole world that you've done it, but donate the money to, just fucking give it to your friend even. Do you know what I mean? If you have a mate who's like down and out and might be part of the community, like, get them a drink, bring them for lunch. Do you know what I mean? Like, look after your friends. And I think, but I definitely think you have to give the money directly where it's needed, and it's not needed in the tills on the high street.
Where, like, maybe 10%.
That's the thing. Lucky goes. That's the thing. And it's like, what conditions are these things being made in? And which I, you know, these are all ethical things that I have to, like, I'm not, like, on a high horse about, because I haven't a clue myself. Do you know what I mean? And I'm always buying stuff from China, so I can't really judge anyone. But yeah, I think just find a little fundraiser, even if it's a monthly donation, even if it's a tenner, if that's all you can afford or whatever, like, just, you know, give the money directly where it's required.
More cheerfully.
Yeah.
What would be a favourite memory of your Dorothy life?
I think I feel like I'm about to make one of my favourite memories this Dublin Pride, because it'll be the first time I kind of properly go. I'm going to be in the parade. We're going to be right up the front. We're going to be sharing the U equals U message very loudly. And one of my best friends from ACT UP, Will, he's just been named the Grand Pride Marshal for Pride, so beaming. And but I think probably the first time I went to Pride here in Manchester, so that was 2017, so I can't believe I'm like about to go into my third Manchester Pride. It's crazy. It was just very special to be with all these guys. They'd obviously been through a lot here, lost one of their best friends at the Ariana concert, and
Martin Hurt.
Yeah. And I knew Martin from Twitter, exactly how we were talking earlier, you know. And I mean, I won't get into the ins and outs of it, but he was just so iconic, and we were obsessed with each other. And I think coming over here and getting to experience that with these guys, and I suppose being able to do what I could to like lift their spirits as well and stuff like that, it was just incredible. It was the whole weekend, and the sun, like, just the weather was supposed to be really bad, and then on the day the sun just like burst out and it was like 30 degrees or something. We're all sweating. But yeah, and it was really, really nice. Yeah.
And finally, I ask everyone to nominate another Dorothy for me to speak to.
Oh wow, that's a good question. Could it be anyone?
Anyone.
Rebecca Moore, Cock Destroyer. Has anyone suggested her?
Yes, but I feel like the more people who suggest her,
yeah.
So I'm working on it. Yeah, she's actually, I think she's a really great ally. I think she was tweeting about Anne Widdecombe this morning.
Yeah.
And she's so smart.
Yeah, they're incredible. The Cock Destroyers, love them.
I love how Holly manages to combine such an exuberant love for queer culture, from drag queens to online meme culture, with a really incisive intelligence about what she calls knowing her place, which I think is really important as a straight person, to be thoughtful about the community that you're moving in and the implications of your privilege and giving back to a community which has given you so much and sadly still needs allies. Holly gave me a lot to think about. Next time, I'll be speaking to the Eurovision legend Nikki French. Nikki represented the UK back in 2000 and has since worked extensively with the dance label Energize Records, who also work with Pride season favourites Sinita, Sonia and Hazel Dean. We obviously talked about Eurovision's considerable gay following and the perennial question of how to behave as a straight woman in gay clubs where Nikki often performs. See you next time.